Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with registered dietitian Katie Mora, creator of the Gut Honest Truth Academy. Katie and I speak about H. pylori, seed oils, thyroid health, how to support your liver, and more. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now on to my conversation with Katie. Katie Mora, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm very excited to speak with you, and I would love to hear what's the number one thing you're excited for our listeners to take away from our conversation today.
Yeah, I think it's obviously different for everybody and what they're actually going through and their experiences. But I think just knowing some of either the science or reality behind some of the things people are going through can be really helpful to get them to the right place and people. But I think being able to give some tangible, like actionable things that people can do from the comfort of their own home and not feel so overwhelmed is always one of my major goals as an educator and provider.
Love it. We love practical takeaways here. So the listeners are going to love that for sure. And yeah, why don't you tell us how you got into gut health coaching, functional health, and et cetera?
Yeah, I always want to say I wish it was like some amazing story of my own journey, because I feel like that's how a lot of functional people get to where they are. But I really grew up in a household that was all healthcare. Like, I come from my parents being a pharmacist and a dentist. I've got like psychiatry, psychology, and kind of like beyond that goes on. So I kind of grew up with like it in my ear at all times. I was that kid where you got a cold and my mom was like, here's some echinacea, here's this. So I sort of grew up with it being there. So inevitably I went into the health world. And then it wasn't until after I actually went through college and was about to go for my master's degree that I took a moment, shadowed some people, and realized functional medicine and like the gut world, and sitting in some like IFM, Institute for Functional Medicine conferences, everything sort of just clicked for me, made way more sense, brought the whole clinical picture kind of like full circle. And I just was like, this is pretty cool. And this is where I want to be. So I really dove into what like was the light switch for me in the healthcare world.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like it was basically definitely not handed to you, because that would sound like it was automatic, but it was kind of like given into your path by your parents and then your natural curiosity. So I love that. And I love the work that you're not just doing with patients slash clients yourself as well, but you have also created a beautiful Gut Honest Truth Academy, I believe it's what it's called, where you're passing on this information to other people like myself, perhaps like coaches, et cetera. And I love that.
Yes, you know, I can reach more people if I can help you guys reach more people. And that's like the goal, right? Is take the ego out of it and be able to have so many other people help people.
Wonderful. No, I love it, especially when it comes to these topics of like thyroid health, hormone health, digestion. And digestion is actually kind of where I would like to start, because I think there are a lot of terms that are being thrown around where people are like, does this apply to me? I don't really know what that means, et cetera. So one of them being H. pylori. Could you explain to us, well, what is it? How can we know if we have issues with this or how to treat it, et cetera?
Sure. Big nerd for H. pylori. It's like my favorite thing to work with. So H. pylori is a bacteria, right? It's pretty, we've been co-evolving with it for a very, very, very long time, which people don't realize because it's now kind of in the, you know, social media realm a little bit more. But it is, in terms of when we say quote unquote infections, it's the number one GI infection worldwide. So over 60% of the population worldwide has it. You can have it and not have what we'll say refer to going on as an infection, meaning symptomatic, causing problems. And as long as your immune system and your gut, you know, are healthy, they can essentially co-evolve, right, and live in a harmonious way with this bacteria. So H. pylori is really notorious for causing like ulcerations and or possibly stomach cancer, which is really, 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 I want to say only 2% of the population even get that. So do not get freaked out by that stat. But it's really known for gastritis, causing things like acid reflux, burning, nausea. People often say you get like a gnawing pit in the stomach, right? You feel better actually when you eat versus having an empty stomach. So a lot of times, if you're like, my stomach hurts and I feel like I need to just put food in it. So sometimes I think of people who are like late night snackers or like have to eat towards like the middle of the night and they don't know why. A lot of times it's actually a GI related issue. But if you have, reflux, if you have gastritis, esophagitis, indigestion, you struggle digesting meat or protein, like those might be clinical signs where I'd say we should test H. pylori.
Yeah, that's very interesting to hear, especially those kind of like symptoms that you mentioned, and people listening might be going through them like, oh yeah, that maybe that applies to me. So what do we do about that if we have identified, okay, I do have this condition, so how do we work with it?
Yeah, it depends on a bigger picture a lot of times. So I often like to do a comprehensive stool test. It depends what else. So if somebody has, we'll say IBS, you might want to also look at a bigger picture like a SIBO and stool test because and food relation, all that thyroid health, because they all kind of go together versus one sole factor being a problem. But with H. pylori, let's say you do a test, it comes back positive. Depending what comes back positive and how severe it is, you may go an antibiotic route, which is known as triple antibiotic therapy, where they're doing like multiple antibiotics. There is a lot of research and data, which is what I teach more at GHT Academy, of natural approaches being as, if not more effective than antibiotics at this point, because there's so much antibiotic resistance going on, meaning the drugs don't work anymore because it's just we're taking too many, essentially. We're overtreating things with antibiotics. So there's things like probiotics actually can be really helpful. It can increase like a treatment protocol up to 16%. We've got things like mastic gum. People may know mastic gum from even just being in different chewing gums and stuff like that, which is a supplement, which is, I call it the best monotherapy, meaning if you just give mastic gum to somebody by themselves, like by itself, nothing else, it can have up to a 50% eradication or treatment efficacy, which is really impressive. So think like probiotics and mastic gum, two very benign products for a short, like 2 to 4 weeks. That's like a 70 or 65% eradication rate just with those in a couple weeks. So there's different herbs and things that you can do, but I want to throw a random tidbit in there. If you have H. pylori, the likelihood that your partner, your spouse, your family has it is pretty high. So if you truly have like bad symptoms and you're being treated or wondering why you were treated, it got better, then it got worse, you need to think about, does your partner have it and they're actually giving it back to you over and over. So I often treat like the household.
Very interesting. I'm very sure most people don't think about it like that. And the tip with the probiotics, just I guess my question on there, is it like just totally through foods, or would you also supplement with probiotics there?
I usually do the supplement itself that for multi, various reasons is like one, sometimes getting people to actually enjoy or take, fermented foods can be challenging for some. We sometimes as like coaches and practitioners need to separate ourselves from what we would do because it's more innate to some, just part of your job to kind of prioritize those things. Some people don't like them or want to eat them, right? So I usually use that. Also, different strains are beneficial when you get over the counter. Let's just say yogurt, for example, right? You're often getting not live cultures or one strain, not high enough dosages. So usually we're talking about therapeutic dosages of specific strains, which come from supplementation a lot of times.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I like your point of like, okay, what's optimal, rather what's like actually practical, and is the person going to adhere to as well. So really, really good point. Another question I had was kind of in regards to like parasite cleanses, because like just in general, like cleanses and parasite, like it sounds fancy, or oh, maybe I need a parasite cleanse, but like where is this actually, like is that something someone should be thinking about, in which cases and how and so on?
I tend to always say I live in the gray area in healthcare and nutrition, but this is not one where I do. So I'm very opinionated on this one. The parasite cleanse thing has gotten out of control. So, I'm not going to get into the details as to why, but we know where it's coming from if you've been around long enough. So, yes, parasites happen, right? Every single day, people are being exposed to worms, to parasites, to all sorts of things. We put them in our mouths. The real issue is our stomach acid levels. So, what we're creating in our stomach that kills things off. It's like a first line of defense towards literally everything. God bless you. towards everything. It should kill it off before it hits the intestinal tract and is able to actually cause an infection, right, with a parasite. Doesn't mean we don't have them, right? we can kind of even go back, in historical times of what went on with parasites, but it should kill it off. It's when we have parasites that we can do on testing, and then somebody will say, well, isn't the testing bad for parasites? Yeah, it's not great, right? Like, especially the ones that we're getting general OMP parasite testing through like GI or PCPs. Those aren't great and usually have to have like anywhere from 3 to 20 to have an accurate result, which is kind of wild. But there's all sorts of testing out there that you can do or go off of symptoms. I would say if your immune system and your gut is able to tolerate parasites, tolerate viruses, whatever we're talking about, really, you can live and be in this harmonious, okay state with H. pylori, with parasites, whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's more about the whole picture than one specific thing, if that makes sense. There are times and places like cyclospora, if we get that, or if we get sick with giardia from our pets, like that should be treated. You will know, though, you will have frequent diarrhea and explosive diarrhea and problems that we should have either a medication or approach for.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot of
It's
sense.
more complicated than the internet makes it sound.
Yeah. It does always make it just, oh, just do this parasite
And
cleanse
I'll
for.
just comment because people are gonna say, well, and if you feel better when you do a quote unquote parasite cleanse, like, okay, that's okay. You know what I mean? Maybe we're onto something. No one's saying that. There's too many people that say I put myself on a cleanse or somebody said I needed one and then I saw things come out in my stool, right? And many, many times when we're doing that, we are taking products that are so harsh on the gut that we are actually causing the mucosal lining in the gut to come out in our stool. So we're seeing food, we're seeing undigested food, we're seeing mucosal strains come out and actually look like quote unquote worms. But most worms, paras, not worms, but most parasitic infections are microscopic. You cannot see them.
Right. Yeah, I think that's very helpful to know also. On that note, and I don't know if that actually fits in there though, but something like coffee,
Enemas.
yeah, exactly. Do you work with that? Is that something you ever recommend? Is there any bonus, like benefit to this?
There are benefits. A lot of people like them. I tend to not recommend them. Not that I'm anti them and not recommending them. It's just not a thing. I'd rather you drink the coffee than stick it up your bum, if you will. But it definitely has a time and a place for like bile flow and helping people or people think of any enema, period. If you can almost think back to like your grandparents when they were really constipated, that was a thing we used was enemas, right? So they work and they're effective, but I think that people abuse them just like people abuse laxatives and different things that we can get our hands on. So there's a time and a place, but I think there's a lot of other things that we can utilize as well. So it's
Gotcha.
definitely not one of my top
Yeah.
go-tos. Yeah.
And I guess too
Specific person that's going to do it.
on the note of coffee, and I didn't actually have that on my list, but I'm going to ask because it's out of
Yeah.
personal interest. I'm a coffee lover. Yeah, I guess is coffee good for the gut specifically, like aside from anything else, from like performance enhancing or sleep impeding or whatever, in terms
Yeah.
of gut health, what role does coffee play?
Yeah, it can play a lot of roles. I am very, we'll always say this, especially at GHT Academy, because myself and our head of education, who we always are like, don't touch our coffee, don't come for coffee. We're going to find any way to tell you it's good. The cons, I'll say, generally speaking, would be if you're reliant on it, and almost another thing you're like, I don't want to say abusing, but abusing in terms of your gut and motility. And then coffee tends to be one of the most, we'll call it toxic foods in terms of there's a lot of pesticides on it. There's a lot of mold on it. So that doesn't mean coffee's bad. It just means you can get better coffee beans that actually take care of the beans, right? So that's just like my two cents and even the way we make coffee. I think I call it coffee hygiene. Oh, into coffee, I'm coffee hygiene as to like what we're actually putting in it, how we're brewing it, like all of that can matter, especially for people who have gut health issues or trying to optimize their health, if you will. But the pros, like, first of all, it improves the basically it's called the gastroalcoholic reflex, where when we have warm coffee and caffeine in the morning, it helps our bowels empty, right? That's why when you smell it, even some people are like, I have to go to the bathroom. And that's not a bad thing. People talk about relying on coffee so much, like, there's a reason, a mechanical, you know what I mean, and a physiological reason that it works and is helpful for people, and we shouldn't shame that, in my opinion. It's the people who are like, I have to have this and magnesium and all these things to go to the bathroom, where we're like, maybe we dig a little deeper as to what's going on there. But and it's rich in polyphenols, which is one of the most underrated things for gut health that there is. We always talk about probiotics and all of this, but polyphenols are so great for the microbiome. So any way you can eat them or get them through food, right? Coffee and liquids is great.
That's awesome. Okay, I always thought like I mean it is reasonably like acidy, I guess, or like I'm from Germany, so over there I'm kind of like influenced by the Italian culture. Quite often after your meal you'll have like an espresso or something like that. And so I was always just like, is that just a habit thing or because it tastes amazing or is there actually something to that?
And so people get so nervous about acid. Your stomach's supposed to be very acidic, right? It can kill parasites. We just talked about that. So it should be acidic. If you have a problem with acid, right? We need to figure out why do you have a problem with acid. So if we're just saying acid reflux and you get it with that, you need to think about why you're having what I call intra-abdominal pressure, meaning there's a pressure building up in your stomach or your sphincters on each end of the stomach aren't working well, that the acid is going into the wrong place, right? And that's there's a, I teach a whole course on this. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that for people, but why it's not that you have too much acid majority of the time. It's why is it actually moving, physically upward instead of down?
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, no,
So don't
I can
worry about the
imagine
stuff.
that there's a
It's just
lot of things
coffee.
connected with that, but I think even just the note on like, hey, your stomach acid is supposed like you, it's fine
Supposed to.
to yeah to solve that for a
We like
reason.
to try to stop things that should be happening in the body.
Yeah.
Should be.
Very good. Thank you so much. And then, of course, another sort of topic, and that's not necessarily specific to gut health, but just in general, I'd love to hear your take on it. And that's seed oils. Yeah. Is there, yeah, good, bad? Give us the details. Is there
Yeah, I just did a fun reel on this. So the thing with seed oils, my issue with everything in the healthcare space and social media and the coaching world, doesn't matter, functional world, is that whenever people talk about things, context is always missing. It's always missing, and then people run with it, and then we kind of expound upon like food fear and all these dysregulated eating issues and stuff like that. So I'm not gonna even, unless you want me to, get into like the nitty-gritty of the bad part of, seed oils, but I like to zoom out and say there's omega-3s and there's omega-6s, okay? Right? Omega-3s, we're talking about fish oil, we're talking about omega-3 supplementation, we're talking about even chia seeds, flax seeds have it. They don't necessarily convert as well in the body as seafood, but they're there. And then we have seed oils and things that are omega-6s, right? We call them inflammatory and these anti-inflammatory, right? We are supposed to be in a 4-to-1 ratio, every human being, for homeostatic, meaning balance of inflammation in the body, 4-to-1 ratio of omega-6s to omega-3s, meaning seed oils, or should be actually higher than omega-3s in the body, right? The problem is that Americans, generally are speaking, are walking around in like a 16 or 20-to-1 ratio, meaning they have way too many seed oils or omega-6s coming into the body versus the omega-3. So the question, more so in my opinion, is not omega-6s are bad, omega-3s are good. It's about the ratio. It's about how can we minimize where the omega-6s are coming in and how can we increase the omega-3s, right? So that's really my take on it is. And people always love to say, like, we can test this just so you know through blood. And it's actually really cool because it's like, I never see, even the healthiest people don't come back in the ratio they should. And we can see the other, concepts like arachidonic acid, which is super inflammatory. But yeah, the question isn't, should you be bringing your olive oil to a restaurant for people to be cooking in? No, like, just don't go to the restaurant if you don't like what they're cooking in or you can't balance it out in other ways. So eat more seafood. Take an omega-3, that's a good quality one if you need to, right? Most of us need to. And then minimize the prepackaged foods, the frequency of eating out, whatever you can, right? That's make it
Very,
simple.
very practical takeaway. And I'm totally with you on the sense of also like sometimes we over stress the minute or this we major in the minor where we're like okay, let's look at the big picture. What are if you're using highly processed peanut, whatever, canola oil on a daily basis to fry your eggs in, and then again your lunch for cooking your chicken and like all of that, yeah, sure, switch that out for something
The
different.
spot,
But if you're going to a restaurant every couple of weeks and they may happen to make your favorite steak in whatever oil, then please just enjoy that.
yes, or don't go go if you're gonna
Yeah.
breathe stink on Instagram. Like, just don't go. Move
Precisely.
out. Yeah. So that's my take on that is like, how do we zoom out and to be able to zoom in and also get the practical piece of it?
Love it. And yeah, Katie, many of the listeners, they're probably more on the sort of constipated side. They're probably actually consuming quite a lot of vegetables, maybe even like too many, sort of in the sense of I'm going through a diet and I would just want to feel full, you know, like having two bags of iceberg lettuce, whatever, and their raw veggies in order to feel some kind of satiation. So on that front, is there like in the sense of when should we have raw versus cooked vegetables? Is there such a thing as too much fiber? Is there kind of like a limit? How can we just go to the bathroom more regularly without trying so hard?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the first thing my brain did when you said that was most people, because even practitioners and coaches fail to say this, is when you are trying to increase fiber, do whatever, you need to increase fluids first. You cannot increase fiber first, or you will get bowel impaction. You will get constipation. So if you're a coach, if you're a provider, please listen and let that sink in. Is the first rule of thumb of constipation or increasing fiber is always increase fluids. Then you increase fiber. Then when we talk about fiber, we need to also think about insoluble versus soluble. You can easily do a quick Google search if you're listening and you're like, I don't know what that means. A lot of people who especially are seeking out like health, coaching of any sort are either like, I don't eat grains, right? Or cut carbs or whatever it is. And then they're just eating tons of what you were just saying, like different raw veggies and stuff like that, which is a problem because when we lack things, right? One actually bulks and one helps push through. We miss half that piece, right? Or vice versa, they're not eating enough veggies and they're eating way too many refined carbohydrates. And then we're missing the insoluble fiber. So you need to have a balance. Even if you're taking supplementation, you need to have a balance. Okay. So fluid intake, fiber balance, fiber amount matters. But let's say you went from, you're working with Lisa, you were eating 10 grams on average a day, and all of a sudden you're like, I need to have 50, and you went to 50. That's a problem. You don't do that. You jump slowly. So you should be like the first few days to week, I now do 15. The next week I do 20. And like, it's normal to have change in bowels. Anything, food, supplements, medications you put into your body that are intended to have impact on the gut are going to have impact on the gut. People always think it's a bad thing. It's supposed to happen. It's when it happens and doesn't pass after a week or two that it's a problem. So I usually say anywhere from like 25 to 50 on average is a good amount. I'd say more like 30 to 50 would probably be a better amount, but slowly get there or, a month or whatever you need. Generally speaking too, like cooked veggies and is always going to be a better choice. It's easier to digest. Your body doesn't have to work so hard. You're still going to get the fiber. You get more of the nutrients out of the food when you can even just at least blanch food and stuff like that. But that being said, if you love salad and you'd feel good when you eat it, eat it. Eat what you enjoy, or you're not going to stick to eating the fiber, period. So that's sort of my take on it is like increase the fluids, get the balance, and then get to 20, we'll say 30 to 50 grams. If you're like, I'm getting to 50 grams, I'm getting so bloated, I'm getting so constipated, I would consider if you have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is a long-winded way of saying bacteria in the wrong place. I would say it's a party on the roof when it should be in the basement. It doesn't necessarily even mean it's bad bacteria. It's bacteria growing in the wrong location. It could be because you're constipated for your whole life. It could be because you have a thyroid issue. Lots of different things can be contributors. But we tend to feel worse, more bloated, IBS type of symptoms when we eat healthier.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of
So
sense.
you can get checked for that.
And yeah, I like the reminder to increase slowly as well. I will share that like 10 years or a little bit longer ago, I was like, I'm going to prove a point that I can get to 130 grams of protein on a vegan diet just because I wanted to
Oh,
like
yeah.
to demonstrate it. And so like from one day to the next, I've probably like tripled my fiber. And oh my Lord, like I was not just backed up. It was so painful for several days. I was like, what the heck have I done? Like I succeeded at what I wanted to prove, but at what cost? I was
I
like,
know.
I'm not
I mean,
doing
you get more gas fermentation, you get blockages. It's just, yeah, we gotta. It's a problem.
that. Not
It
fun.
sounds so simplistic, so it sounds like we can just do it, but like there is, a theory to the madness.
Right, absolutely. Well, and I guess to back on that or to add to that, so if we are in a constipated state and we're like, I want to get things moving in the morning, things like like apple cider vinegar or lemon, or so is there any actual science to support that, or is it just some sort of like housewife tale that people have been doing for however long?
Would not be my recommendation for the topic that we're talking about. That would be
Right.
more like reflux or
Okay,
digestion,
gotcha.
period. What I would probably recommend is first and foremost, take magnesium every night. I always say be proactive and not reactive. So most people become, oh, I'm so constipated now I have to down magnesium and then they end up getting like diarrhea. No, just most of us are deficient in magnesium. It's like 90 something percent are not getting what they need, regardless of how well you're eating. So most of us could use anywhere from 150 to like 400 milligrams of magnesium per night. So especially if like you're extra stressed or you're sick or you're an athlete and you're burning through it, like take the magnesium, but take either magnesium citrate or magnesium citrate blends that doesn't have oxide. Oxide is super harsh on the gut, unless you like take it and you just know it works well for you. But usually it will make you have a st upset stomach, loose stool. Like it's just not great. But magnesium citrate can make you have to go to the bathroom in the morning without it being like urgent and diarrhea. It will loosen everything, relax everything, help you sleep better, help your muscles recover. And then if that isn't enough, and obviously, the coffee can, or tea, you know, warm liquids can help. And then I would recommend either trying something like prunes or prune juice. You can also do butter mixed with that. That's like old school hospital days of dietetics. Or you could do like a tablespoon, or it doesn't have to be a tablespoon. You can start slow, like teaspoon to a tablespoon of either MCT oil or olive oil alongside the coffee or in the coffee. It's like lubing up the GI tract. That will work for
Awesome.
most.
Very, very practical
If
tip.
you can't go, no matter what, get your thyroid checked, like the full
Right.
thyroid. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's actually a very nice transition, because that was the topic I wanted to talk to you about
Yeah.
also. I was saying before we started recording that you and I am connected through the Real Coaches Summit, where you gave such a beautiful presentation, and a large part of that was on thyroid health. So thank you again for everything that you shared there. But maybe we can now transition into kind of like, how do people know there's something wrong with their th thyroid, aside from obviously getting blood work done, or aside from rapidly gaining or losing weight, I
Yeah.
guess. And then what are some practical tips to keep your thyroid happy and healthy?
Yeah, I have a whole ebook on this. I would recommend that's more basic than what I, you know, taught to the coaches there, but and free blogs and stuff. But so I never like to assume things because so many symptoms overlap within at least the conditions I work with. But generally, right, if you're fatigued like all of the time without known cause, like I would wonder about your thyroid. If you're losing hair or your eyebrows are thinning or you are struggling with weight loss, all of that, like brain fog, think about the thyroid. If you have been working with somebody on GI conditions like SIBO or H. pylori or fungal overgrowth and like you just can't get rid of it or it just keeps coming back, I would think about the thyroid, especially what we call intestinal methane overgrowth or methanobacter. Like you need to be looking at the thyroid first and foremost. So there's a lot, anxiety, low stomach acid, like there's so many different, if you've like reflux all the time or hoarseness clearing of the throat, but like there's no known cause to your reflux, think about the thyroid. So there's a lot of things that go on there. If you ever look up the symptoms, there's like 50 plus, it's because it controls everything in your body. It plays a role in everything. So there's lots of things to consider. There's also the way that you work with the thyroid depends on what's going on with the thyroid. There's not a one size fits all, which I think is where back when like the paleo diet and stuff came out and AIP, that's where we like got lost. So like 95% of thyroid issues come from autoimmunity. So the autoimmune, your immune system essentially attacking your own thyrocytes, which are what produce hormones, which we could talk about. But there's definitely a subset of people who get low hormone function from gut issues, under eating, over exercising, chronic stress, right? Infections, all of that. So when you think about what contributes to that, you have to think about how to make it happy that way, right? Eating enough, not over, we'll say over exercising, but like at least eat enough to maintain what you're, you know, doing in the gym, or if you're a marathoner, like what is going on and meeting that goal. Prioritizing sleep, right? Working on the gut is super, super important because at least 20% of our hormones are converted in our gut. Liver health, a lot of our hormones are converted in the liver, and the liver obviously has like 500 plus roles a day. So making sure even just minimizing your what's in your environment. It doesn't have to be you're doing coffee enemas and on a detox and all of that. It's like Do we stop eating out of plastic? Do we stop, you know what I mean? Like, if you have the option 90% of the time to minimize the toxic load coming in, like, do it. You know what I mean? Like, don't buy foods in plastic. Don't heat, try to buy whole broccoli heads versus broccoli that you're going to heat up in the microwave in plastic. Like, they do matter. And it's not about each incident, it's about the whole, right? Zooming out again and saying all of this every day, all day matters. Do we smoke? Do we take a ton of medications that go through liver? So, are we insulin resistant and our livers? Burden, right? Do we have fatty liver? Like, those are the things that you need to work on to actually impact your thyroid.
Very good.
So,
Yeah, I mean, from even just what you're saying here, it really does sound like we need to look at the whole entire picture, obviously. And my question there is also in which or does hormonal birth control affect the thyroid health there? And if so, in which way?
yes. So, mostly talking about like pills, like OCP birth control, over-the-counter pills type of thing, versus IUDs. Both theoretically can have an impact, but when we take birth control pills, right, especially long term, we get some. There's a couple things that can happen, but we get an increase in something called sex hormone binding globulin, and you can test this via blood work. But essentially, right, just like it sounds, binding, it binds hormones, so not just sex hormones, it binds also things like your thyroid hormone, but it can essentially make it so you're unable to utilize your hormones because they're getting bound to something. So we always talk about free versus bound when we're talking about any hormone. Free is what your body is able to actually like use. We call it bioavailable, but able to use in that moment or adhere to receptor sites so that your body can use it. And then bound, when it gets bound to things like albumin, it's usually bound so it can move through the body to get to those receptor sites. But when you have too much being bound up, right, or toxins that bind to receptor sites, this gets more complicated, but you're unable to use your hormones. So you can become hypothyroid from that. You could become low in progesterone, testosterone, estrogen, all of it.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I mean that's super interesting. I guess on the other side then, because many of the women listening are going to be sort of in the menopause transition type frame, does hormone replacement therapy like affect the thyroid? I mean obviously probably to an
It
extent,
can.
but yeah.
Yeah, it can actually in negative ways and in positive ways, theoretically. But the way I would say is if you were having it monitored and you're having both your thyroid and your hormones monitored while doing that and you feel good, I wouldn't stress about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But things can compete for a reset. You know, it gets a little bit more complicated than we probably even have the time to go into. But I would prioritize if the hormones make you feel good and you're on them, like that's important. Just have your labs measured every, 6 months to make sure.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. And
Yeah.
so just generally speaking about the liver, because you mentioned there are so many processes going on with the liver and the cleansing and everything. What would be some practical tips to help make sure our liver is healthy and functioning well?
Goodness. Yeah. So I always say this, I'm like, less is more for a lot of people. So even just what we're putting in, meaning if a medication isn't necessary, right? If a supplement isn't necessary or helpful, like I just had a conversation this morning and they were like, the supplement's doing nothing from somebody else gave it to them. And I was like, so why are we taking it? And they're like, because they said to just keep taking it. I was like, but that's more that your gut and your liver has to do and process. And if it's not helping, like, let's get rid of it. So, that goes like alcohol, right? Like, doesn't mean you can't enjoy a drink. It just means how frequently. I always say, like, what's the input versus the output in everything in our body? So, if you're drinking three drinks a night and you're having dessert and sugar and all these things your liver has to process every single night, and you're heating up your dinner in plastic Tupperware and you're all this crap, right? Like, our output might not be able to keep up with that for that homeostasis. So, it's like, how can we minimize the input and then increase the output? And increasing the output is usually things like minimizing stress is helpful because we burn through different detox nutrients when we're super stressed. But like increasing B vitamins, increasing magnesium, lots of cruciferous veggies if you tolerate them, right? So basically think like, how can I get fruits and veggies and protein in, which are the main nutrients that we need for detoxification. Stay hydrated because we obviously need that. And then you can, if you like, I always say it's the fancy things like, do we have access to sauna? Do we have access to, steam, whatever it is that we like that can also theoretically help us upregulate detoxification. But those are
Awesome.
most more nice to haves for most people.
Very cool. And just one question in regards to the B vitamins. Would that be a methylated B vitamins or like a complex or rather 12, or what do you recommend normally?
Yeah, most people do well with complexes just because otherwise you're piecemealing a billion things. I almost always use methylated. That being said, if somebody does, this isn't really the topic, but like present as an over methylator and they're not tolerating it, you could think about different, either just like piecemealing the B vitamins, or you can get blends that are not just all one type of B12 or folate and has different like adeno, cobalamin and stuff like that. But for the general, gem pop and stuff, like a methylated blend is fine.
Awesome. Well, thank you. You're giving us so many practical takeaways and applications here. I to kind of like round us off with, I would love to just to hear what the outline of your Gut Honest Truth Academy is. Like, do you have, does it have certain modules? If so, how many? How long does it take to get through and everything else?
Yeah, I would love to tell you about that. So, as of right now, and I imagine when this will come out to people, we have what's called a tier one program and a tier two program. You do need to go through the tier one to get to the tier two because it kind of all builds upon each other. But they're two very different programs. So, tier one, we call it based on functional labs, but it's way more than functional labs. It's just what we use to guide the conversation, if you will. So, we go through, we have 12 modules. We go through blood chemistry, hypothyroidism, H. pylori, SIBO, stool testing, cortisol, all the sex hormones have their own time and place of like hours and modules. And then we go through mold and heavy metals and detox, like we call it detox 101. So we kind of go through all the basics of what we feel coaches and practitioners should at least be knowledgeable enough about, you know what I mean, to have those conversations or get people to the right places. And then so each module in that one is about 2 hours in length, some are shorter. And we essentially just release two modules over a 6 month period every month. And then at the end of the month, we have a live office hour where we talk about what we learned in that month, make sure everybody's on the same page, run through any cases we might need to. And then you get practitioner guides along that, which are like my favorite thing. We created them. So they're anywhere from like 20 to 50 page guides that you can readily use with your clients and be able to look up protocols and lab guides and all of that. So it's a really, really great, program, and then you get access to our private community, which is right now about 150 practitioners and coaches of all sorts. We have everything from like nurse practitioners to health coaches, fitness coaches, psychologists, like chiropractors, everything. And we all just kind of like are in there every day talking to each other and helping each other. It's one of the best parts.
That sounds awesome. And then the tier two of what are the topics in?
And I also want to say, because people are always like, I don't want to commit to more things when they're asking me. I made it intentionally so that there is no fluff and you don't have to rot away at your computer because we are busy and a lot of us have families and different things on our plate and hobbies. And like, you don't need to be sitting there going through thousands of videos for me to get the point across of what you need to know. So it's
Love
very
that.
to the point and very practical. And we do not withhold information. So no gatekeeping. Tier two is awesome. It's brand new as of this year and it's a total beast. And we go through, it's not so much, we still talk about tests, but it's not so much testing versus big, huge topics of what you'll see clients come to you often with, like histamine intolerance, Lyme and co-infections, IBD, gastritis and esophagitis, infertility, skin conditions, urogynecological issues, and pelvic floor problems. So there's 12 different modules on that. We even have this year a behavior change with a licensed psychologist that came on. We've got what we call going from good to great, which is more about like business and structure and working with clients and being able to do that piece. So that is completely different in terms of both how much is there, the way it's laid out, but it's really awesome. That is like, it's like getting a crash course on like a decade of knowledge
That's
in
amazing.
six. Yeah, it's really, really cool. And that just came out in January. And we're enrolling for both right now for July.
Oh, amazing. Very cool. Well, I always say, I mean, that's essentially what a coach is for, right? You're getting a shortcut to what all the learnings that they have gone through years and years of their education. So having a coach or a mentor who can give you a shortcut or their condensed version or the most important takeaways, I think is so valuable. I guess just one more question in regards to the first tier. Is it would that also be interesting for someone who's not a coach and literally just like interested in their own health, or is that not so much the case?
So it's so the level at which we teach is definitely, I'll just say it's, we don't necessarily do it for like newbies or patients. That being said, if you're like well read and you don't care about that, we have people, because we do our tier one, we actually, you can buy each individual course as well. You can't for tier two. So we've had people who are like, I've been struggling with H. pylori, and they have like bought the H. pylori module and actually like worked through all of that on their own. And I have been reported back from those people that has been extremely helpful. And or they come see us after they've like educated themselves. We also have people, I can think of like one of our past clients actually is just really into this stuff, like you're saying, but she's not actually a coach. And she wants to actually enroll in the tier two program so she can just like learn more about her and her body. And it might be overwhelming, but it's definitely extremely helpful.
Awesome. Yeah, because exactly like you're saying, we do have quite a few listeners or even clients that are like, they read and absorb everything just because they're so curious themselves, but they're not necessarily a coach or not certified in anything. So
Yes.
that's good
I
to
try
know.
to teach, sorry to cut you off a little bit. I try to teach everything I always do, and make very complex things easier to digest and absorb, because like I just prefaced before, we have all sorts of educational backgrounds, and careers in JHT Academy. And that means that somebody may have gone to med school and somebody may be working, I don't know, with just, let's say like individuals with weight loss and muscle building, but everybody, in my opinion, doesn't mean you have to order the test. You have to know everything and be the guru of each thing. You need to know a little bit about it so that if people, right, especially in the coaching world, we divulge a lot of things to our coaches and not to other people. And like, is there something in your head that can trigger and you can say, you know what, either I want to learn a lot more about this topic because it's all connected, or you know, this actually really sounds like a thyroid problem. Like, it doesn't feel like maybe you got the best workup on your thyroid. I can refer you to somebody I know. Maybe they're in JHT Academy, maybe they're in their local network that can do that proper workup, and you might save somebody like 20 years of frustration and sickness.
Yeah, 100%. And I, actually, that reminds me, I think of something that you said at at your presentation as well, and just like knowing your scope, knowing when to say, okay, I'm going to refer out, or knowing even just to say like to your client, hey, I've never worked with someone with this before, but I'm more than happy to learn about it. Are you willing to, stick it out with me, and like having that transparency? I think that's so valuable, and you're only going to gain more and more trust from your clients if you're doing that.
Exactly. And we ensure in JHT Academy, you get, if you're a member, you get a discount on one-on-one mentoring, because for exactly that reason, I always want somebody who's been doing this a lot longer than you. You know what I mean? If you're like, I would love to learn about the thyroid, but like, this is my first. I have clients who are willing to like be with on me on this process. And then you can meet with our team and say, hey, am I doing this right? Is this everybody safe? Everything? Should I refer out? Like, what's going on? So we ensure that's part of the deal, that you are prioritized and have that ability to do so if you desire to.
Amazing. Well,
Yeah.
thank you so much, Katie. This has been so
Thank
fun. I really appreciated everything you've shared with us today, and I think we've truly succeeded at giving the listener some practical takeaways for whatever condition they might be having. Of course, I'm going to drop all your handles in the show notes, the link to the GHT Academy and everything else. So, I hope the listeners will go and check it out.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Katie. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner, Fat Muscle Project, has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.